So we're reading from Granta Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, Text 15 and 16, chapters entitled Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. And I'll read the 15th verse first. Vidanga Shankar Beryascha Vinapanava Gomukaha Dunduryanaka Gantadya Nedo Dunda Bayastata. Translation. While the Lord was departing from the palace of Hastinapur, different types of drums, like the mudanga, dola, nagra, dunduri, and dundubhi, and flutes of different types, the veena, gomukha, and bedi, all sounded together to show him honor. In the 16th verse, translation, out of a loving desire to see the Lord, the royal ladies of the Kurus got up on top of the palace, and smiling with affection and shyness, they showered flowers upon the Lord. Thank you, Purport. Shyness is a particular extra-natural beauty of the fair sex, and it commands respect from the opposite sex. This custom was observed even during the days of the Mahabharata, i.e. more than 5,000 years ago. It is only the less intelligent persons, not well-versed in the history of the world, who say that observance of separation of female from male is an introduction of the Mohammedan period in India. This incident from the Mahabharata period proves definitely that the ladies of the palace observed strict parda, restricted association with men, and instead of coming down in the open air where Lord Krishna and others were assembled, the ladies of the palace went up on top of the palace and from there paid their respects to Lord Krishna by showers of flowers. It is definitely stated here that the ladies were smiling there on top of the palace, checked by shyness. This shyness is a gift of nature to the fair sex, and it enhances their beauty and prestige, even if they are of a less important family or even if they are less attractive. We have practical experience of this fact. A sweeper woman commanded the respect of many respectable gentlemen simply by manifesting a lady's shyness. Half-naked ladies in the street do not command any respect, but a shy sweeper's wife commands respect from all. Human civilization, as conceived of by the sages of India, is to help one free himself from the clutches of illusion. The material beauty of a woman is an illusion because actually the body is made of earth, water, fire, air, etc. But because there is the association of the living spark with matter, it appears to be beautiful. No one is attracted by an earthen doll, even if it is most perfectly prepared to attract the attention of others. The dead body has no beauty because no one will accept the dead body of a so-called beautiful woman. Therefore, the conclusion is that the spirit spark is beautiful, and because of the soul's beauty, one is attracted by the beauty of the outward body. The Vedic wisdom, therefore, forbids us to be attracted by false beauty. But because we are now in the darkness of ignorance, the Vedic civilization allows very restricted mixing of woman and man. They say that the woman is considered to be the fire, and the man is considered to be the butter. The butter must melt in association with fire, and therefore they may be brought together only when it is necessary. And shyness is a check to the unrestricted mixing. It is nature's gift, and it must be utilized. Read the verse once more, number 16. Prasada shikararuda kurunaryo didrikshaya vavrishu kusumai krishnam prema vrida smitekshanaha. Out of a loving desire to see the Lord, the royal ladies of the Kurus got up on top of the palace, and smiling with affection and shyness, they showered flowers upon the Lord. Omagyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshuramilitam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadha shri vasadi gaura bhaktavinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare Vanchakalpaturubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha namo vishnupadaya krishna prashtayam vitale shimati shivam swami tanamani. So today's verse is all about women, and it's all about shyness and feminine qualities. I know one devotee and his daughter is called Lajita Gaurangi, and that means Radharani, who is shy. Lajjata means shy, although it's different here in the Sanskrit. Vrida smita ikshanaha. Smita's smile. I'm not sure whether it's Vrida or ikshana, but it's definitely different here. Once upon a time, I gave class in Budapest temple. Actually, it's strange giving class in English. I'm used to giving class in Hungarian. But I was giving class in Budapest, and it was from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it was all about Srimati Radharani. The verse was just about Srimati Radharani. And it was about shyness as well, about how the gopis had to overcome shyness to go and see Krishna. And the gopis, they had to overcome many different things to go and see Krishna. They had to overcome their familial situation. They had to overcome the customs that they were living in. They had to overcome their shyness. They had to not get caught to go and meet Krishna. There were so many different obstacles. And that was one of them, shyness. And they had to overcome that to go and meet Krishna. So I was speaking about that and how it's not really an issue for us these days. It's not like, you know, a big thing in society. Well, speaking about that, although it is, you know, very high topic, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then on the same day, I was still in the temple, we were staying there, and one devotee, he came around and he was giving out cards and postcards and things to devotees. And one of them was a postcard or a picture from Radhastami here, of Radha Gokulananda. And on Radhastami, well, at least on this Radhastami, they had lots of different cakes for all the different qualities of Srimati Radharani. And this picture was a picture of her and a cake with the quality that she is shy. So it's the quality of the gopis. It's the quality of women in general. For the gopis, it was actually an obstacle for them to go and meet Krishna. But as we hear, Prabhupada says, interestingly, it's nature's gift, which must be utilized. And then the first line, he says, shyness is a particular extra natural beauty of the fair sex, and it commands respect from the opposite sex. So it's there for a reason. It helps the men and the women to maintain distance between the two of them. And it works very well. It's Krishna's arrangement. With the topic of men and women and masculinity and femininity, then I've heard a lot from Bhakti Vidya Purnamaj about these topics. He talks about this a lot, male and female psychology and how they come together, how it should work, how it does work if we apply the principles correctly. And he explains that the material energy, when we approach the material energy, then it goes away from us. And he gives the example of a pigeon. If you see pigeons, we live near London, so there's lots of pigeons everywhere. If you see the male pigeon and the female pigeon, then the male pigeon will approach the female pigeon. And what will the female pigeon do? She'll run away. And as long as the male pigeon is chasing the female pigeon, she'll just run away. That's how it works. That's the game. And then when he stops and gives up and thinks this is useless, you know, I'm going home, he turns away and goes, then the female pigeon turns around and she follows him. So that's just the nature of the material energy. Krishna made the material energy in such a way that it frustrates one. It doesn't actually work. As long as you're trying to be the Purusha, as long as you're trying to be the enjoyer, then Maya, or the enjoyment that you're looking for, will always be one step away. And we know the example also of the donkey. So the man riding the donkey or taking the donkey somewhere, the donkey's carrying a heavy load, and he just puts a stick over the top of the donkey and hangs down a carrot in front of the donkey. So the donkey's walking all day to get that carrot, but he never gets it because it's stuck right in front of him. So it's the same principle with us, although not in such a gross way. But then when we give up that attachment, when we give up our endeavors to enjoy in the material world, then it comes to us. Then it starts to become attracted to us, because then we're becoming aloof. We're exhibiting that opulence of detachment, and then that attracts the material energy. So this is the way that it works. And its shyness, in the same way, ironically, is a very attractive quality. And the shyness is a lady in general exhibiting that she is, you know, she's experiencing obstacles to approach, say, a man. She's like, you know, she's like, she maybe want to. I remember in the Bhagavatam, there's one passage, I think it's with King Paranjan, and there's a queen, and he says, I'm very attracted by your shy but lustful glances. So shyness indicates that there's something there. She, you know, she's enthusiastic, but at the same time, she's feeling checked, as Prabhupada says. She's being held back by that. And the way that it works is that shyness, because she's not going forward, then it's attractive, because she's holding something back. And Prabhupada says that this shyness can impress many people, it can attract many people, and it generates respect as well. And he mentions the sweeper woman. And then he says that half-naked ladies in the street do not command any respect, but a shy sweeper's wife commands respect from all. So this is the quality also that we hear of in Varnashram, that it's not to do with one's birth, but it's to do with one's guna, the qualities that one exhibits. So somebody may be very rich or very wealthy or well-dressed, but if they don't act in a cultured way, then it's not attractive. But somebody may be very in a very humble situation materially, very poor, but if they're acting in a cultured way, then that's very attractive. I went to one festival the other day, raising funds for a farm project that we're doing. And there was one lady that I spoke to, and she was definitely under the influence of something not recommended for Vaishnavas. And the way she was talking was just like so direct. It was just like, you know, that she wasn't holding anything back. She wasn't saying anything bad, but it's just like so looking in my eyes and just like total like, and it was so kind of repulsive and so not attractive. And I'm not used to that, you know, dealing with especially Vaishnavis or ladies in general, but when there is no check, when there is no culture, when there is no shyness, then it becomes very not attractive and not able to be respected. Another example that Srila Bhaktivedanta Purnamaj gives is of a jeweler's. He gives this example to ladies that which jewelry shop would you think has the most valuable diamonds and gold within it? Is it the jewelry shop that puts everything in the window, displays everything in the window that it has, all the most expensive diamonds, all the most expensive gold, the necklaces, the rings, the whatever else they may have, earrings? Or is it the jewelry shop, as you may see in Piccadilly in London? You go to the shop and there's nothing in the window, it's just black. And there's a name of the jewelers at the top. And then there's two or more big security guards just standing at the door. So which one do you think contains the more valuable jewels? It's the one that has them protected and the one that values them. And he was giving this example to the ladies. So if we have something valuable, then we don't just, you know, give it to everybody. Don't show it to everybody. Don't share it with everybody. Keep it to themselves, and then people understand, oh, actually, there's something valuable there. Then it becomes attractive. Oh, you know, it's a shop, they're selling something, but I know it's a jeweler's shop, but it must be pretty valuable if I can't see it. If they're not even going to let me into their own shop, then it must be something pretty valuable. But as I mentioned, how the gopis, they naturally had this shyness, but they had to give it up to approach Krishna, and then Krishna rejected them when they did give it up and struggled through the forest and arrived there finally to meet him. He said, why have you come? In the same way, this shyness is very beneficial when there's interactions between men and women in general, and especially Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis in a temple or in a devotional setting. But then how do we deal with that when Matajis have to go on book distribution, for instance? They stand on the street, don't approach anybody because they're shy, or, you know, cover their faces so that nobody can see them. What do we do in that situation? And can we maintain shyness? What's your experience, Mataji, as you go out on book distribution? Or are you all too shy? Yeah. So yeah, obviously it should be there to some degree, but we have to adapt it according to that situation. Prabhupada said that one should be a lamb in the temple and a lion on the chase. So in the temple we're all very nice and humble and quiet and, you know, proper. And then on book distribution, then you can be like a lion. You can stop people, you know, go up to them, engage them in Krishna's service. Use your natural abilities to engage them, attract them, because it's in relationship to Krishna. And this is also related to the general understanding of humility. What does it mean to be humble? Shikinchana Chaitanya Prabhu asked me to give class, so I say, no, I can't give class, I'm too fallen. And then everybody he asks, because all the Vaishnavas are so humble, then they all say, no, I can't give class because I'm too fallen. And nobody's going to give class. We understand that we're fallen, but we understand that class has to be given and somebody has to talk about Srimad Bhagavatam. So as a service, then we do that. And similarly for ladies, for men, my spiritual master, Srila Sriram Rajosa, he says he's a shy person. And he says it was very difficult for him in the beginning to go on book distribution. I think as it is for many devotees to go out there, it's a new religion for us, new clothing, new everything. You know, we're just getting used to like all of the rules and regulations, and then we're sent out onto the street, perhaps in dhoti in a quarter, to stop people and to preach to them about our new religion. It's not easy. You know, it takes some guts, it takes some bravery. But it has to be done, because this is the way that others receive Krishna consciousness. And actually, when we do that, when we give up our own desires and our own proclivities to serve Krishna, then that becomes real humility and that becomes real devotion. So the principle has to be applied according to different circumstances. A very important part of this and a very important part of the purport is how men and women should be, their association should be restricted. Srila Prabhupada says here that for some, it seems apparently that some people say that restricted association between men and women was only introduced by the Muslims in India. I don't know who says that. Maybe the Muslims. But it was prevalent before that. And this is a very important principle, because we're coming from, in general, a Western background. Even if we're Indian bodied, still we're in the UK. It's, you know, this mood is there that everybody's equal, everybody's the same, everybody's friends, everybody's associating with everybody else, it's okay. You know, even things getting even more mixed up these days, it's difficult to even tell who's a man and who's a woman. Like in the schools, there's even things that they're not teaching the children if they're a boy or if they're a girl. They're leaving them to make the decision when they get older. So this is like happening. I mean, I was hearing about these things when I was in Hungary, because things here are very different than in Hungary. In Hungary, it's more sheltered. It was a ex-communist country. It's not as advanced as the Western European countries or America. And I was hearing that over here in the West, they also have like toilets now. So you have men's toilets and women's toilets, and then kind of like, oh no, sorry. I was saying in universities they just have like toilets for everybody. So it's like, because you can't really tell who's who, and it's risky to say that you're, you know, a woman and you're a man. Somebody might get offended. So they just like, you know, have toilets for everybody. And if you decide that you're a man or a woman before you go in, then that's okay. But if you haven't decided yet, then you can go in and it's not a problem. So it's very important for us to restrict this, because if one is associating loosely with the opposite sex, then that encourages that false ego that I'm a man or that I'm a woman. My old temple president, now Mahajudi Swami, he used to say that in any interaction between men and women, then there's sex going on the subtle platform. Maybe the most innocent exchange, it may be, you know, Mataji, where's the temple room? Or Mataji, you know, can you tell me where this devotee is? But as soon as those two false egos come into contact, then they have to link somehow or another. And on the subtle platform, then it links in that way. Of course, if somebody's a self-realized soul, or preferably if there's two self-realized souls in a man and a woman's body talking, then there's no subtle sex. But as long as we're on the conditioned platform, then it's there. And as Prabhupada explains, then women are like fire and men are like butter. So it's not a good idea, if you want to keep your butter, to put it right in the fire. In fact, it's better to keep it as far away from the fire as possible. And then you can maintain your butter. The closer it gets, the more it will melt. And that's just the way it works. It's described in Shastra. And we can all, I think, especially devotees who have come to devotional service from Western background, we can experience when you come and there is that separation of the two sexes, you can think so much more clearly and you become more determined, you're not distracted by so many things. And as soon as it comes up again, then we become confused. So it's very good if the Matajis and the Prabhus are separated. Even as Grihasthas, not that, you know, the husband lives in Harrow and the Mataji lives in Radlett or something like that, but although that happens sometimes. But subtly and in our consciousness, Prabhupada says, what does he say? I'm going to find it right now. I don't see exactly where he says it, but he says, because we're very fallen, then the Vedas allow very restricted association of man and women. And I took that as meaning in the Grihastha Ashram, that there we have that concession, Prabhupada says, that you can get married. But within the Grihastha Ashram also it's extremely restricted. We know that sex life in the Grihastha Ashram is only for begetting children, which can mean never, if you're not going to have children. And many devotees get married when they're older. Or it can mean, like, you know, very few amount of times if you have children and then the lady gets pregnant. I know one couple, I don't want to get into too many details, but they came together and she got pregnant the first time and they had children and that was it. So that's how it works. And when Prabhupada said that to his disciples, he gave them the instruction, you know, this is how it works. This, you know, if you attach to women and you can get married, and then you can have sex for having children, and he said maximum once a month. Then the disciple, I'm not sure who it was, maybe it was Hayagriva, he said, well, what's the point then? So what's the point? It's not worth it. And Prabhupada said, exactly. It's not worth it. You have to learn that. So Grihastha Ashram is not a concession in the sense that, okay, you're married, so now you can relax. No, because then you'll stop your advancement in devotional service. The same principle applies. Although there are differences of opinion on different things in that, but Prabhupada generally gives that instruction that sex life in Grihastha Ashram is only for begetting children. Because as soon as one becomes involved in that, then one's spiritual advancement slows down. Prabhupada also said that, he said, if one can walk normally, then what is the need to put 100 kg weight on your head? He was referring to the Grihastha Ashram. So if one can advance in spiritual life, if one is doing okay in chanting Hare Krishna, then you don't need to get embroiled in other material activities. If you're doing okay, then carry on. Because in the Grihastha Ashram, there are so many different things to deal with. Although the majority of devotees, 90% of devotees will get married. I heard in Hungary, everybody knows there's new Vajradham there, the farm community. But in the beginning, in the early 90s, the yatra kind of began in like 89. Then there were devotees joining, there were brahmacharis, and my spiritual master said, okay, we should start a farm community now. And everybody was a brahmachari, and they were like, yeah, why are we doing this? And then they bought a farm, and then they're working on it, building the temple, and somebody said to him, it was Chitta Haripu, he said, why are we doing this? We're all going to stay brahmachari. We're all going to be book distributors. There were book distributors. We're all fired up. And he said, you may think that now, but I know that in the future, then most of you are going to get married. And then that's how it goes. All those devotees, they generally get married. And then, of course, some devotees who are fixed up and who have pure enough heart, they stay brahmachari. But the majority of devotees will get married. So that's why he manifested that even before the devotees realized they would need it. And then in the future, when they all decided to get married, then they moved to the farm. So Prabhupada, in regards to men and women associating, he gave the rule of thumb that the men and the women should associate to the degree of please pass the salt. Shishi Radhika Kulanandaki Jai. So that doesn't mean that if you're married, then that's all you can say to your wife, please pass the salt, or you try to express everything through that sentence. Try and tell your wife she's beautiful by saying, please pass the salt, in a very emotional way. But it means the absolute, not that, in terms of, say, brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, or then what's needed to be done to practice Krishna consciousness and to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, that's what we do. But beyond that, then we don't. Because as soon as we go deeper than that and we go beyond that, then we start getting into trouble. And even with the please pass the salt, you can still get into trouble. depending on how you say it, depending on when you say it, depending on who you say it to, depending on what mood that person is in. If you say please pass the salt, you say please pass the salt, and she thinks, oh, he likes me. And then it has to go to the temple president, and then he has to sort out the situation. So, I mean, maybe the best would be, as Lord Chaitanya introduced in the Gundicha Marjanam, that we just say Hare Krishna for everything, and then it remains more pure. But we're not so advanced to do that, so sometimes we have to ask for the salt. But very important principle that the ladies and the men should stay as separate as possible, except if somebody needs salt. And then, in terms of masculinity and femininity, as Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj talks about in his lectures, then he talks about principles. So there's the masculine principle and there's the feminine principle. And this may be a controversial subject in Kali Yuga, and it'll probably get more and more controversial. Even Prabhupada, when he came, he was talking about women in different ways. And they was getting in so much, well, not, Prabhupada wasn't getting in trouble, nobody to tell Prabhupada what to do, but it was so controversial, especially with the press, that Prabhupada just started saying, well, I'm not going to talk about this subject, because it wasn't conducive for his preaching of Krishna consciousness. It was such a hot topic and a topical thing that people weren't ready to hear what the Vedic definition is. And so Prabhupada didn't speak about it. Just as he would say, you know, we don't necessarily have to speak on Bhagavatam or speak on the Vedic scriptures. If people aren't ready to hear, we can just do kirtan, and then people get purified by the holy name. But as devotees, we understand these things a bit better, although still it's, I think, interesting topic in the West especially. But Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj explains that there's the masculine tattva, and then there's the feminine tattva. And that's prevalent everywhere, irrespective of men or women or the West or India, whatever it may be. And the masculine tattva is that the male principle, he gives shelter. And the feminine principle is that she is sheltered. And we can see that in all situations. Actually, everything fits into that category. You've probably heard all this before from Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj, but it's relevant to the topic. So if you say this building, if we talk about this building and us within the building, which one would be the male principle? Us? Why is the building the male principle? Because it's giving shelter to us, yeah. Yeah, you could define it in different ways. You can define it in different ways, yeah. Yeah, but in the way that I was thinking there, it's giving shelter because, you know, we're inside, it's warm, we're using the facilities of the temple. And there's so many different examples of that. Say, I mean, you could say like a car. The car is if you're getting into a car, the car is a male principle because it's carrying you, it's taking you somewhere, you're taking shelter of the car. So these principles are there in every different instance. So in this situation with the Bhagavatam and the little stand here, which one is the male principle and which one is the female principle? Ladies, which one do you think? Huh? Yeah. Yeah, so which one's male and which one's female? Yeah, because it's holding the Bhagavatam there. The Bhagavatam is depending upon the stand, the table. And this is just a principle. So we can understand, okay, the masculinity is that it is there, it gives shelter. It's giving an opportunity, it's being depended upon. And the feminine depends upon that. The energy, the feminine is energy. And it depends upon the male. And the original example of this, the original tattva, is Krishna and his Shakti. So Krishna is there, he's male, he's the Purusha. And his energy, his Shakti, such as Srimati Radharani or Sita and Ram, she's depending upon him, she's his energy, as are the Jivas. So all of us, we're actually female. We're actually all dependent upon Krishna. He's the Purusha and we're the Prakriti. And we experience this day in and day out, that we're taking shelter of Krishna. We're in this material world, tiny little jivas, occupying, 1.5, 2 meters of space for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, with very limited knowledge and understanding, and we're constantly calling out to Krishna, I don't know what to do next, Krishna, I don't know how to deal with this situation, I don't know where to go, how should I deal with this devotee? How should I chant? What should I do now? How am I going to distribute these books? I can't do it without you. How am I going to make some money? What am I going to do about my ashram? We're taking shelter of Krishna because we're the female principle and Krishna is the male principle. So no matter how mixed up it gets in Kali Yuga, if a man is dressed up as a woman and then decides he's going to become a woman and then he changes his mind and goes back, no matter how mixed up it gets, still the principle is there that the male is the independent that gives shelter and the female is depending upon him. And then different things come up in that regard. So Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj explains that in the Grihastha ashram, then the traditionally, although I know lots of exceptions to this rule in the Grihastha ashram, then traditionally the man gives shelter to the lady mentally, emotionally, physically, financially, spiritually, and the lady takes shelter and serves. That's like the traditional. And there's two qualities that the man has to develop that are considered to be very important, and two qualities for the lady to develop that are considered to be very important. Does anybody know those? No? Okay, so for the man, it's for him to be sensitive and to be sense-controlled. And for the lady, it's for her to be satisfied and to be chaste. And those two, they have correlations between them. So if the man is sensitive, then the lady will be satisfied. And if the man is sense-controlled, then the lady will be chaste. And if we can develop those qualities within the Grihastha ashram, then it can work. And the reason that those qualities are mentioned is because both as men and women, we have tendency not to do those things. The men, I mean, experience for myself that for men to be sensitive, it's not so easy. Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj says that the male principle on men means like controlled power. And there's strength, there's power, and it's controlled in some way. That's like the male principle. And so for us to control it in a very refined way, in a very kind, considerate, sensitive, selfless way, is almost impossible. But that's what we have to work on in the Grihastha Ashram. And if the man can do that, if he can be kind and considerate to his wife, then she'll be satisfied. Although the ladies can have the tendency not to be satisfied, then they get something, I want to get a bigger house, I want more money. And if any of the Prabhus have ever heard this who are married, and I want more saris, I want to go on more holidays, it's not enough, I want more. Because stri is the tendency to expand, to expand materially. But if the man is sensitive, then she can try and be as satisfied as possible with what he is providing. And the other one, the male being sense-controlled and the lady being chaste, the man has a tendency to enjoy his senses. Men are kind of like animals to some degree, just kind of like rough, do what we want to do. Like the kind of conception of Henry VIII, just, power, eats until he falls asleep and conquers his enemies and sleeps. But if he's sense-controlled, then the woman can be chaste. And that's pretty obvious correlation in the Grihastha Ashram. And also, if the man is sense-controlled, if he's actually following the regulative principles and following them, subtly as well, and to a high degree, in a refined way, then the woman will respect that. I've also heard that with Grihasthas, if they come together and the man can't control his senses, then the lady will lose respect for him and think, he's not real Vaishnava, he's not really a cultured person, he's just, a victim of his senses, and then she won't want to listen to what he has to say as well. So that correlation between sense control and chastity is also very important. And it gets more complicated as well, because, as I mentioned, we're all Prakriti and Krishna is the Purusha. So originally we're female and Krishna is the male. But then we see in this body, at least for this half of the room, that we're in male bodies. Okay, so it sounds a bit weird if you give a class outside and you say we're all female. Welcome to the class, gentlemen. First point in this lecture is that you're all female. Then it may not go down so well. They may not be able to understand what we're talking about. So it already gets a little bit complicated. But then the ladies also, in this material world, we're all female. You have female bodies, but you have a Purusha above. You have the mentality of a male. So it becomes even more complicated. Is that understandable? You're all big philosophers, so I'm sure it's not so complicated. Nobody either shook their head or nodded. So, but we're all female by nature, right? The jivas are all Prakriti. So they're all dependent on Krishna and serving Krishna directly or indirectly. And for us, it's not so apparent because we're all in male bodies. But still, that's just a material body. The soul is the jiva, which is feminine. But in this material world, we're all in the mood of a Purusha. We're all in the mood of a male, which is to enjoy and to predominate. So we're in male bodies and we're trying to predominate. That's kind of understandable. But the ladies, they're in their jivas, which is female. They're in a female body. But still we have this mood of enjoyment in the material world, of enjoying our senses, predominating, getting what we want, putting ourselves in the center, which is male. So it becomes complicated. But as we know, the solution is to become servants of one another, to become servants of Krishna, but also to know what is the Dharma for my particular situation. As I mentioned, for the men within that Grihastha Ashram, it's important to be sensitive and to be sense-controlled. For the ladies, it's important to be chaste and to be satisfied. If we're not in the Grihastha Ashram, then Prabhupada also talks about here how shyness can be very beneficial for the ladies in their dealings with everybody. But then he also said that if we're out preaching, if we're out giving Krishna consciousness, then just as the gopis had to give up that shyness to approach Krishna, to go to Krishna, then we may have to give that shyness up to some degree to give Krishna to others, to go to Lord Chaitanya and to engage in Lord Chaitanya's service. So these are some of the points that Srila Prabhupada mentioned in this verse, some of the intricacies of Vedic culture. Thank you very much for your attention. It's almost 8:30. Does anybody have any comments or questions?